We don't know what this will mean for Trump's presidency. We don't know if we will see Republicans and voters turn their back on him. But this is a more serious situation that I think he has found himself in.
The clouds of corruption darken over the White House. It's Friday, August 24th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also coming up, new tariffs on China take effect. Pakistani women join an elite police force, and Times Square virtually flooded. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The United States has put into effect 25% import duties on an additional $16 billion in Chinese products, bringing the total to over 1,000 items valued at about $50 billion in trade a year. That's on top of the 25% tariffs it imposed on $34 billion worth of Chinese products in early July. Beijing has followed suit in each case with an identical percentage of tariffs in retaliation. China's Commerce Ministry issued a statement Thursday criticizing U.S. tariffs as a violation of World Trade Organization rules and says it will file legal challenge under the WTO's dispute resolution mechanism. Global economy expert David Dollar says the continued exchange of punitive tariffs between the world's two largest economies will take a while to affect domestic prices in the United States, but American consumers will eventually see higher prices for a wide range of products.
A lot of what we import from China are parts and components, and so our firms are complaining. They're all lining up at our Department of Commerce to look for exemptions because it's disruptive to their business not to be able to get their parts from China.
The new round of tariffs took effect the day after delegations from both nations met in Washington for the first of 2 days of talks aimed at resolving the dispute. President Donald Trump told Reuters in an interview this week he does not expect much progress from the discussions. For more on this, you can visit our website at voanews.com. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has named Ford Vice President Stephen Bagan as special representative to North Korea. Pakistan's newly elected prime minister offers to start dialogue with India to resolve disputes, including the Kashmir region. Typhoon Cimarron expected to make landfall in western Japan, raising the risk of more hardship for a region battered by floods. And a prominent social media activist in Bangladesh remains in hiding, saying he fears for his life after the country's intelligence agency summoned him to discuss certain issues. Expanded coverage of these stories and more at our website, voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. Saturday marks the one-year anniversary of the security crackdown in Rakhine State in western Myanmar that sparked a mass exodus of Rohingya Muslims to Bangladesh. An estimated 700,000 are in temporary housing in relief camps in southern Bangladesh, and yet another 600,000 are believed to still be in Myanmar. Their plight has been likened to ethnic cleansing by the United Nations and the U.S. Myanmar has reached repatriation agreement with Bangladesh, but conditions are such that the Rohingya are too frightened to return. On Tuesday, Myanmar State Councilor and de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi said Myanmar is ready to welcome back the returnees, but have to be sent back by Bangladesh. Meanwhile, the UN Children's Agency has warned of a lost generation of Rohingya children. Simon Ingram is a spokesman.
Because it isn't just the 500,000 or so children on the Bangladeshi side of the border, but it's also those who are still left behind in Rakhine State, whose access to education is patchy at best and highly limited. So we really are talking about a whole generation of Rohingya children whose education, whose hopes of learning, the basic skills that they need to make a success of their lives, to achieve anything in their lives and contribute to their community's future, is in jeopardy.
Monique Skidmore is a professor and deputy vice chancellor at the University of Tasmania in Australia. She told VOA's Victor Beattie, 1 year after security forces reportedly responded to a series of militant attacks by going on a rampage of killing, torture, and rape, and burning of entire villages, there are no signs of compromise or change.
So at the moment we have 500,000 children in camps in Bangladesh, 360,000 children in Northeast Rakhine State, no access to international agencies or monitors. We have Aung San Suu Kyi in Singapore giving a lecture, reviewing her first 2 years of being in power in Myanmar, refusing to use the name of the Rohingya, talking about the generals in the cabinet as rather sweet individuals, and talking about the security terrorist challenge that they faced in Rakhine State, and saying that unilaterally she cannot repatriate the Rohingya, but this really depends upon a joint effort with Bangladesh. So that leaves this generation of children traumatized with no security, no citizenship, and no repatriation so far.
One report from Reuters suggests that the refugee flow out of Myanmar into Bangladesh continues even today.
It appears that the Rohingya exodus occurs across most borders, not just the Bangladesh borders. There doesn't seem to be any interest by the government in repatriating the Rohingya in Rakhine State. And as Aung San Suu Kyi mentioned in her speech in Singapore, that they had mapped out some areas for the Rohingya to go to. But that, of course, is not going to make anyone go back to a situation in which the military refuses to accept accountability and in which Aung San Suu Kyi seems unwilling or perhaps unable to do anything to try and guarantee the security of any Rohingya who remain in Rakhine State.
You mentioned the children. The UN Children's Agency on Thursday warned of what it described as a lost generation of Muslim Rohingya children to a lack of education, to disease and floods.
And I think they are trying at the moment to increase the amount of education in the camps in Bangladesh to include up to 14-year-old children. So that would be an increase to try and do something to provide basic numeracy and literacy for a generation of children who have had such limited access to education when they're in Burma and very little, if any, access in the preceding year.
Likening it to Indonesia, I spoke to one analyst who suggested that the international community, which is sanctioning members of the military, are pressing Myanmar to change too quickly, that it's going to take time like it is doing in Indonesia, where it's taken decades to return to civilian rule.
I suppose it's a question as to whether you believe that the prevalent attitudes towards the Rohingya are simply going to evaporate over time. What we're seeing, especially on places like platforms like Facebook, is awful hate speech, nationalist rhetoric, Buddhist fundamentalist rhetoric, and very little interest in changing that. So there had even been thoughts that the increase of social media platforms would bring a new openness to the country, and yet it's acting as a source to channel and intensify these long-held racist beliefs against the Rohingya. So I'm not sure that we can say that we're seeing any changes yet to openness and transparency, to any decrease in racism. And certainly there's been no move that I can see to change the constitution to remove the generals. And that is the major obstacle to ongoing democracy in Burma.
Professor Skidmore added that among the casualties of this humanitarian crisis is the global reputation of Nobel laureate and democracy advocate Aung San Suu Kyi. Happening now in Asia, Asian markets closed mixed, with mainland China markets recovering as investors took to the trade talks between Beijing and Washington following the imposition of new U.S. tariffs on Chinese goods during Asian hours. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. And we're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. The Trump White House went on the defensive Wednesday, one day after two former close associates of the president became convicted felons. Former Trump attorney Michael Cohen pleaded guilty to campaign finance law violations in connection with hush money payments to two women who said they had affairs with Donald Trump before he became president. In addition, former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort was convicted of fraud charges not related to the 2016 presidential campaign. As VOA national correspondent Jim Malone reports, the twin legal bombshells are likely to add to President Trump's political woes ahead of a crucial midterm congressional election later in November.
At the White House, Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders stood by the president's assertion that he did nothing wrong.
As the president has stated on numerous occasions, he did nothing wrong. There are no charges against him in this. And just because Michael Cohen made a plea deal doesn't mean that that implicates the president on anything.
In court Tuesday, Cohen said he was acting on orders from then-presidential candidate Trump when he paid off two women to keep them quiet shortly before the election. Cohen's attorney, Lanny Davis, said his client may also have information related to the Russia probe, led by special counsel Robert Mueller.
It's my observation that what he knows, that he witnessed, will be of interest to the special counsel. That's my opinion. We'll see.
At a rally in West Virginia Tuesday, Trump again blasted the news media and the Russia probe.
Fake news and the Russian witch hunt. We got a whole big combination. Where is the collusion? You know, they're still looking for collusion. Where is the collusion?
Trump's supporters, like Patty Beavers, are sticking with him.
He's putting America first. He's keeping his promises, just like he said. And I really believe that he will continue on.
Democrats were eager to highlight a new line of attack in the wake of the Cohen and Manafort cases, led by Senate leader Chuck Schumer.
What a swamp. What a swamp. Far worse than the swamp that existed when President Trump took over. He has not cleaned the swamp. He has made it more wretched and more fetid.
The legal cloud hovering above the Trump White House appears to be darkening, says analyst Laura Brown.
There is a sense that momentum is building in both, you know, special counsel Mueller's case, but also with regard to sort of the more questions around corruption and the president, which was revealed with Michael Cohen's plea.
There's also the sense of an embattled president fighting on several fronts at once, says Julie Pace.
We don't know what this will mean for Trump's presidency. We don't know if we will see Republicans and voters turn their back on him. But this is a more serious situation than I think he has found himself in at earlier points in his presidency.
But the legal and political fallout is still a long way from being determined, says Paul Schiff Berman.
Does that mean that he will be impeached? Not necessarily. That's a political process. Does that mean that his supporters will stop supporting him? Not necessarily. That's a question of politics as well.
And speaking of politics, it's now clear that the legal problems involving Cohen and Manafort will be an issue in the November congressional elections where Democrats are favored to make gains. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
And you're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news alert from VOA Asia, Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte is threatening war once again with China, his latest in a series of rhetorical broadsides against Beijing's perceived expansionist activities in the contested South China Sea. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. And VOA Asia continues. To serve and protect, police forces around the globe live and die by that motto. Pakistan's police force is no different. But in a religious and conservative country where women are often relegated to the role of homemakers, A few are going against tradition to join Pakistan's elite commandos. VOA's Behzad Hamdar narrates.
This is the police training center in Nowshera City in northern region of Pakistan, where about 600 elite commandos have successfully completed training. Among the chosen few are a handful of female commandos.
The situation in my province was very bad. Terrorism was on the front line. Much like my father desired, my sisters and I were also very interested in joining the force. We are three sisters and we are all elite commandos.
Chief Instructor Islam Noor says female commandos who join the force voluntarily get no special perks and receive the same training as their male counterparts.
It is a common belief that women are comparatively weak. However, they joined voluntarily, and once they started training, they proved that they can perform just like men, and in fact, they did.
Rukhsana, one of the new graduates, says the training was rigorous, but she has proven herself as good as any man.
We first went through physical training at the elite center. Then we got trained on using guns from RPG to 9mm pistols. We learned how to rappel down from a 190-foot tall building. Of course, people think that women can't do what men can, but we have told our officers that we will do the same thing, and we are.
Both Pari and Rukhsana have been assigned to Hangu District, one of the most dangerous areas near the border between Afghanistan and Pakistan. Local police commanders say these women will play a crucial role here in fighting terrorism.
Women elite commandos in Hangu have a very important role. Despite repeated terrorist attacks, they've not quit. They've served along with us. They have conducted raids. There have been so many attacks on police, and some police officers have sacrificed their life here, but the female commandos have never rejected a mission because of fear.
Women in Pakistan are traditionally discouraged from taking on such roles and often face challenges from their own families.
When we decided to join police, all of our close relatives cut ties with us. None of them was prepared to support us. But my father always told us that he wanted to prove that daughters are no less than sons.
In addition to being the newest members of an elite force, Rukhsana and Pari are part of the unit's bomb disposal squad, highly trained experts who risk their lives to save others. In doing so, they inspire other young girls to go beyond society's expectations, to serve and to protect. Behzad Hamdar, VOA News, Washington.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Singaporean Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong was seething when information on 1.5 million patients was stolen from the city-state's largest public health care provider. Experts are pointing the finger at China. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the outgoing commander of U.S. and NATO forces in Afghanistan, General John Nicholson, said despite recent insurgent attacks that have left hundreds dead, he sees an unprecedented opportunity for peace to end the 17-year conflict. The general acknowledged there's been no significant change with respect to population control by militants. However, he said other forms of pressure have emerged that are advancing the peace process. Christine Fair is an associate professor in security studies at Georgetown University. She told VOA's Victor Beatty that she disagrees with the general's assessment.
I have a lot of respect for General Nicholson. I've known him for many years. But these statements, and in fact, he's made a number of preposterous statements since Trump became president, I can see no basis for them in reality. They are just simply baseless. The simple fact of the matter is whatever happens in Afghanistan is overdetermined by what happens in Pakistan. President Trump, despite his various braggadocious statements to the contrary, has not meaningfully changed U.S. relations with Pakistan such that the United States is able to put more pressure on Pakistan to cease providing every manner of support to the Taliban. In fact, President Trump has worsened the U.S. position because one of the things that the Obama administration did was that he opened up relations with Iran. Chabahar became a viable alternative to Pakistan. And in fact, for Afghanistan's long-term success, it needs to have an economic corridor that's independent of Pakistan. And, of course, Chabahar could have provided nations that are friendly to Afghanistan a logistical alternative that would have diminished the dependence upon Pakistani airspace and ground space. And Trump has, of course, removed that opportunity.
Does the elevation of Imran Khan to the prime minister's post in Pakistan represent any change in the opportunity?
Imran Khan did not win this election on his own merit. He was elected because the army wanted to elect him. Now, for the first time in many years, the Pakistan Army now has a prime minister which largely embraces its most nefarious foreign policy positions, as well as the means that Pakistan has long relied upon to prosecute those foreign policy objectives, namely Islamist non-state actors. Many people, I think, labor under the delusion that Pakistan's prime minister has any meaningful portfolio. In fact, Prime Minister of Pakistan has largely been the mayor of Islamabad, and his remit doesn't even extend to Rawalpindi, which is where the army headquarters is located. So I don't think that the army's election of Imran Khan to the prime ministership is going to mark any meaningful change.
What do you make of the Russian involvement in peace efforts, inviting some dozen countries? The Taliban apparently is going to send representatives, but the Afghan government and U.S. apparently will not take part.
What is really fascinating about Russia is that the Russians also have a really significant pivot towards Asia that they are making. We see Russian involvement in South Asia anchoring in its engagement with Pakistan. This has actually been quite discomforting to the Indians, who have long viewed the Russians as a robust ally. And, you know, the Indians are somewhat piqued by the Russian engagement of Pakistan. So this is not an unexpected move by the part of the Russians.
Georgetown University's Christine Fair. Finally, in the heart of New York City, one artist has created a dystopic version of Times Square, submerging it underwater and filling it with a virtual fleet of boats. VOA's Tina Trin has more.
Visitors to New York's Times Square are more likely to find it flooded with tourists than with water and boats. But that didn't stop one artist from trying.
It's very difficult to float 141 vessels from New York Harbor 30 feet above your head in the middle of Times Square.
To pull it off, Mel Chin used technology. The boats featured in the mixed reality piece Unmoored are virtual holograms, save for one massive physical sculpture entitled Wake.
Imagine Times Square being submerged in water, and you have to see all the boats coming in the sky. It's really amazing.
You're underwater and you have boats above you, and then it ages as you're going along, and plankton attaches to the bottom, so it gives you a sense of the passage of time.
Visitors use either Microsoft's head-mounted HoloLens computer or a phone app to experience Unmoored. It offers a simultaneous nod to the past and a glimpse at the future, one that's affected by climate change.
To me, there's no debate. It exists.
It's a meaningful moment in time for us to pause and consider the implications that our activities, day in and day out, have on the world.
Others contend the technology still has a ways to go.
It's in its infancy, so it's not very convincing, but I get the idea and I appreciate the start of this kind of new form of art.
With Wake and Unmoored, questioning is encouraged.
My favorite part is the beginning, and that beginning sometimes is at the end, because then the beginning of the interactions can start occurring.
According to Chin, the most original form of art is one's own search for the answers. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
And that's VOA Asia for this week. We hope to see you again on Monday. Have a great weekend.